Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here to share the Dharma together today. Hope everyone had a good holiday break and is enjoying the new year. I almost wanted to say we will now begin our regular session schedule, but we will be beginning our regular sitting schedule for the year. The early parts of the year will include 3 weekend sesshin and a zazenkai. And of course, there's the Blue Mountain sesshin in the summer. Great ways to break into sesshin practice. And then in the fall, of course, we have our 2 full 7-day sesshin. For those of you who are a little bit new here, let me say a little something about a teisho. A teisho is not a talk or a sermon in the usual sense. It's an attempt by the teacher, an offering, really, to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And it's an attempt to express the Dharma, the great truth of things, as nearly as it can be in words. Of course, words always fall short. So don't try to analyze or evaluate or understand in the usual way. Just let the words flow through you like a wind. It's quite surprising. 2 years from now, 3 years from now, after practicing for a while, something that you heard or read a long time ago, suddenly the light goes on, and oh, that's what that's about. So don't worry about hanging on to it now. If you need to change your posture, shift your posture during the teisho, that's perfectly fine. But please do so unobtrusively and quietly. And however you sit, keep the back straight. The Buddha said, "Not in the sky, nor in mid-ocean, nor in entering a mountain cave, is found that place on earth where abiding one will not be overcome by death." The natural and necessary state of the human condition is one of complete and ongoing practice and realization. Why? We are the only species that we know of that is cognizant of death, or more accurately, death as opposed to life. We are aware of linear time and the limits it places on our lifespan. The fundamental occupation of all spiritual practice is this great matter of birth and death. But how do we deal with it? How do we seriously contemplate our own death and stay sane? A Sufi aphorism goes, "Sleep with the remembrance of death and rise with the thought that you will not live long." One of the practices that we take up here as part of our every minute Zen training in this center is the contemplation of death. But there is a danger here. Instead of losing the fear of death, one can become morbidly obsessed with it. How did our great Dharma ancestors face life and death? Today we'll look at an example, case number 3 in the Bianlu, the Blue Cliff Record. Blue Cliff Record is one of a series of classical collections of koans that we work on in the center in our program in the Hakuin Yasutani Sanbo Kyodan lineage. Koans are these very pithy, sometimes mysterious, sometimes incomprehensible records of the sayings and doings of the great masters, usually those from Tang Dynasty China. And they are to be worked on in Doksan in conjunction with the teacher, with the help of the teacher. And the goal is not to understand the koan in the usual way. It is not about solving a puzzle. It is about dissolving the barriers between you and the koan, and therefore between you and the great masters, and between you and your own Buddha nature. Case number 3 in the Beyond Lu. Matsu unwell. Great Master Ma was unwell. The accountant monk asked him, "How is your reverence feeling these days?" The great master said, "Sun-face Buddha, moon-face Buddha." And Shui Do, the compiler of the Blue Cliff Record, always adds a verse to each case. Sun-face Buddha, moon-face Buddha. What kind of people were the ancient emperors? For 20 years I have suffered great bitterly. How many times have I gone down into the Blue Dragon's cave for you? This distress is worth recounting. Clear-eyed, patch-robed monks should not take it lightly. Master Ma is Matsu Daoyi, or in Japanese, Basso. His dates are 709 to 788 of the Common Era. His teacher was Nanyue Huairang, who was a Dharma heir of the sixth ancestor, Wei Nung. I guess that makes Matsu number 8, although the strict historical numerology is never entirely clear. When Matsu was a young monk, he sat assiduously all day for many days at Chuan Fa Temple. Huairang came along and asked him, "Venerable sir, what do you intend in this sitting meditation?" Matsu replied, "I intend to become a Buddha." Huairang picked up a tile and began to rub it on a rock. Matsu asked him what he was doing, and Huairang said, "I am polishing it to make a mirror." Matsu said, "How can you make a mirror by polishing a tile?" Huairang said, "Rubbing a tile will not make a mirror, neither will sitting meditation make a Buddha." Later on, Huairang told him, "Do you think you are practicing sitting meditation, or do you think you are practicing sitting Buddhahood? If you are practicing sitting meditation, meditation is not sitting or lying. If you are practicing sitting Buddhahood, Buddha is not a fixed form. In the midst of transitory things, one should neither grasp nor reject. If you keep the Buddha seated, this is murdering the Buddha. If you cling to the form of sitting, this is not attaining its inner principle." That statement applies especially to our lay life. In a monastery, monks sit for 5 or 6 hours a day and double that in Sesshin, which takes place every month. I doubt many of us can do that. So our practice must expand far beyond sitting Buddha. No fixed form. Do not grasp. Do not reject. Clinging to any form, sitting, walking, lying down, standing, or any state, is not attaining the inner principle. Matsu understood this, and his practice became one of not clinging to existence, not clinging to non-existence, not to form, not to no form, not to life, not to death. Great Master Ma was unwell. The accountant monk asked him, "How is your reverence feeling these days?" The great master said, "Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha." The commentators tell us that the master is on his deathbed. It is said that sun-faced Buddha lives for 1,800 years. Moon-faced Buddha lives a day and a night. Well, that's fine. But what happens at the end of 1,800 years? Or at the end of the day and the night? Is 1,800 years better than a day and a night? Or vice versa? A mayfly lives one day. There are clams in the deep ocean that live hundreds of years. Do you suppose they ever get together and compare notes? Does the mayfly envy the clam its long life? Or does the clam envy the mayfly that lives totally in freedom in the sun and air? The 16th century essayist and philosopher Michel de Montaigne wrote, "Just as our birth is the birth of all things for us, so our death will be the death of them all. That is why it is equally mad to weep because we shall not be alive 100 years from now, as to weep because we were not alive 100 years ago. Living a long life or a short life are all made one by death. Long and short do not apply to that which is no more. A small man is no less whole than a tall man. Neither men nor their lives are measured by the yard." I don't think a Zen master could have put it any better. Nevertheless, there is a missing ingredient. As correct and even profound as the words of Montaigne or other philosophers might be, without strong Zen practice and training, they will be of little help. One must pursue a consistent Zazen practice and see clearly for oneself the impermanence of, and therefore the no-self of everything, including the personal self. A purely intellectual approach will not lead to a deep acceptance of the great reality, but more likely to a nihilistic despair. Eat, drink, and be merry, and all that. There are, of course, stories of deathbed conversions, sudden changes of heart at the last moment. But what are the chances, really? One of the things that I found a bit strange was that whole death with dignity fad of a few years ago. The notion that having lived a careless, self-centered life, you can always suddenly reform at the last moment. No. How you die is a continuation of how you have lived. And how must we live? We live our lives as dana, relinquishment. Those who have read Lord of the Rings may remember that Bilbo Baggins gives a huge party on his birthday at which he gives away all his possessions. He does it in the hope that it will make it easier for him to give away the one thing that he absolutely has to let go of, the great ring of power. But in the end, it doesn't help all that much. Maybe he waited too long, or maybe he was giving away the wrong things, material things only. Dana is not just relinquishment of our stuff. That's easy. Dana is the relinquishment of that which is most precious. We have to give up the I, the me, and the mine. It is absolutely crucial, therefore, to keep practicing, to continue our zazen. And all its permutations of commitment to the temple practice, mindfulness, service, and yes, discipline, we continue to walk the way. Absent that, all the philosophical insights will not help us. If we have been honest, diligent, and consistent in our practice in the temple and in our lives, then what reason is there to make any changes when we enter our final years or days or moments? The more we practice Dana in all its manifestations in our lifetime, the more likely we will be able to face with some degree of equanimity that great and final relinquishment that we must all come to at last. Here's a story. There was an old Zen monk on his deathbed. The last day had come, and he declared that that evening he would be no more. So followers, disciples, friends started coming. From far and wide, people gathered. One of his old disciples, when he heard that the master was going to die, ran to the market. Someone asked, "The master is dying in his hut. Why are you going to the market?" The disciple said, "I know that my master loves a particular type of cake, so I'm going to purchase the cake." The cake was difficult to find because it had gone out of fashion. But by the evening, somehow he managed. He came running with the cake. Everybody was worried. It was as if the master was waiting for someone. He would open his eyes and look and close his eyes again. And when this disciple came, he said, "Okay, so you have come. Where's the cake?" The disciple produced the cake. Dying, the master took the cake in his hand. He took a bite and started munching the cake. And then somebody asked, "What is your last message, Master? You'll be leaving us soon. What do you want us to remember?" The master smiled and said, "Ah, this cake is delicious." And he passed away. That old monk died as he lived, every moment fully. He had no need to convert or reform or attain to anything. He needed no bucket list. How many stories are there of Zen masters who died sitting in zazen, as they did every day? The Buddha was the same. He continued to teach, encourage, and admonish his disciples to his very last breath. Is it possible for us to live in such a way that dying is no big deal? Will we be all serene and content on our deathbeds? Maybe, maybe not. It's a tall order. But to paraphrase Edmund Burke, do not fear death. But if you do, continue to practice in fear. The great master said, "Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha." Sun-faced Buddha, the bright radiance that illuminates the universe. At sunrise, the glow in the east grows brighter and brighter. As the sun tips the horizon, the shadows retreat until everything is completely revealed. Trees, buildings, rush hour traffic, the radio blaring in the apartment above. All is this moment. Nothing is hidden. Everything arising and passing away in perfect harmony, the net of Indra, all beings. Every atom contains all other atoms. And at the same time, each is separate and distinct. All is Buddha. All is one. All times are this time. Wonderful indeed. Sun-faced Buddha lives for 1,800 years. 1,800 years. 1,800 births and deaths. 1,800 kalpas on the wheel of samsara. Many births, many deaths. I am serene in that cycle, says Yongja in Song of Enlightenment. Moon-faced Buddha. The pre-dawn moon floats over the mountains, utterly silent, utterly serene, not a cloud in the empty sky. Nothing arises. Nothing passes away. From the very beginning, there has never been a single thing. Wonderful indeed. Moon-faced Buddha enters extinction, nirvana, in one day and one night. Does nirvana happen in one day and one night? Or does it happen in 1,800 or 18,000 or 18 million years or lifetimes? And does it really matter? One dharma includes all dharmas. One day is all days. Past, future, life and death have only the reality that we give to it. Jwedo's verse. As is my habit, I'll read it line by line and make comments. Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. Comment. Sun-face, moon-face, whose masks are they? What kind of people were the ancient emperors? Comment. Where will you find those ancient worthies now? For 20 years I have suffered bitterly. Comment. Are you bragging or complaining? How many times have I gone down into the Blue Dragon's cave for you? He cannot travel there for you, but the best guide is the one who has been there. This distress is worth recounting. Comment. The story from the beginningless beginning. It never ends. Clear-eyed, patch-robed monks should not take it lightly. Comment. You, too, must climb a mountain of swords. Matsu says, sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. Is this the same as the old monk eating cake? Ah, how delicious. Each one expresses the truth of this moment. Each one is the truth of this moment. You too are like that. Living and dying, each one of us is the truth of this moment. That is the fact, whether we know it or not. How could we not be? So in this new year, let us all continue to work to discover that fact. And when we do, and live that discovery every moment, that is when, together with all beings, we realize the way.